This episode is provided by Thomas Allgaier and Frenis, based on the most relevant LinkedIn posts about GTEC's AI Europe 2026. Frenis supports ICT and tech providers with AI ecosystem strategy by delivering independent vendor assessment, build versus buy analysis, and ecosystem intelligence that prevents expensive mistakes and positions the providers competitively. You can find more info in the description.
So, I think that sets the stage perfectly for what we're going to get into today.
Yeah, absolutely. Today we're doing a deep dive into the top trends from GTEC's AI Europe 2026. And we're basing this entirely on the curated insights and the most relevant LinkedIn posts that came out of the event.
Right. And honestly, the shift in tone on LinkedIn from the attendees was just, it was massive. We were way past the phase of just marveling at what AI can theoretically do.
Oh, 100%. The conversation for ICT and tech professionals has completely moved to the reality of deploying this stuff at an enterprise scale.
Exactly. And before you even get to scaling models, there's this huge foundational question that everyone was talking about. Where does the AI actually live and who controls it?
Which brings us to the first major theme we saw everywhere, digital sovereignty. It's funny because historically, the European tech sector viewed all this heavy regulation and data governance as a constraint, right? Like an anchor slowing down innovation.
Yeah, especially when you compare it to the US or Asian markets. But the posts from GTECs show that the narrative has completely flipped. Governance is actually being wielded as a competitive advantage now.
I mean, it makes sense if you think about it. Relying entirely on these massive external data centers controlled by foreign entities, it's basically like building your company's entire operational future on rented land.
That is a great way to put it.
Right. Because if the global provider suddenly changes their pricing or they get caught in some geopolitical crossfire, your lights just go out. You have no control.
And that's why we're seeing such a huge push for sovereign cloud solutions and independent European AI stacks. Executives are terrified of vendor lock-in.
And invisible data leaks, too.
Yes, exactly. So when European providers offer this localized infrastructure, they aren't just selling software anymore. They're selling institutional resilience and trust.
Which is huge. Right. So if we're securing this infrastructure and building our own power grid, so to speak, the next question for a CTO is, well, what are we actually running on it?
Right. And based on the market sentiment at the event, nobody is buying just AI potential anymore. The era of the flashy generative text demo is completely over.
Totally over. The buyers at GITEX were aggressively focused on failure scenarios.
Yeah, they want to know the blast radius. Like, what happens when a model hallucinates in a live production environment? The bottleneck really isn't the model's capability anymore. It's operationalizing it safely.
Oh, wait, let me push back on that a second. Is the technology actually the bottleneck here, or is it us? I mean, looking at the posts, the real constraint keeping ICT leaders up at night is actually a lack of internal human execution capacity.
Oh, you mean the talent gap?
Yeah, and not just needing more prompt engineers. That's kind of a myth. The real gap is in data pipeline architecture and systems integration.
Ah, I see what you mean.
Like, if you want AI to optimize the supply chain, somebody has to physically connect that modern AI model to a 20-year-old legacy ERP system that runs on completely fragmented data. It's like trying to plug a quantum computer into a 1990s fax machine.
Which perfectly explains why there was such a massive demand for trusted integration partners at the event. Organizations don't want to buy another isolated software license. They need orchestration.
Exactly. They need partners who can actually map that raw AI capability into their messy corporate reality.
And because human bandwidth is so stretched, enterprises are turning to systems that can just execute tasks themselves. Which brings us to the huge focus on agentic AI.
Yes, agents. But we should probably draw a hard line here, because it's super easy to confuse an AI agent with standard IT automation.
Right. If you're listening and thinking this is just a complex Zapier script, you are dangerously underestimating it. Standard automation is just rules-based. Like, if X happens, trigger Y.
Right. But what they were showcasing at GITEX, like the supply chain AI agents, they are dynamic decision systems. They evaluate context, weigh probabilities, and actively make choices.
They're basically acting like digital air traffic controllers.
Yeah. And a really practical deployment pattern we saw for this was around ARG copilots, retrieval augmented generation.
Which is essentially how you solve the hallucination problem for these agents, right?
Exactly. Because without ARG, the language model is just taking a highly educated guess based on the open internet. But with ARG, you force the AI into a closed book test. It has to search your secure internal database first and generate an answer strictly from that retrieved document.
Makes sense. But taking that a step further, If these AI agents are moving beyond internal copilots and are actually acting as buyers or researchers for the company, are most product catalogs even readable by an AI?
That is the million-dollar question. Product data readiness was cited as a mission-critical priority for this exact reason. The whole paradigm is shifting from optimizing for human buyers to optimizing for machine buyers.
Wow, yeah. Think about the B2B sales implications there.
I mean, if a logistics firm's AI agent is scraping the web for software vendors and your specs are locked inside some beautiful but totally unstructured PDF brochure, the agent is just going to skip you.
You could lose a massive deal without a human ever knowing you were even an option, just because your data wasn't machine readable.
Exactly. But optimizing for that means opening up huge internal data pipelines.
Which introduces a terrifying new cybersecurity risk. I mean, if an agent can execute financial transactions, the data and the network protecting it have to be absolutely bulletproof.
Which completely tracks with why data governance and cyber resilience actually overshadowed the AI models themselves in a lot of the LinkedIn discussions.
Trust really is the baseline currency here. We're seeing things like NIS2 compliance and secure by design principles becoming massive competitive differentiators.
Oh, yeah. NIS2 changes the entire development pipeline. You can't just rush an MVP to market and patch the security later. Cryptography and access controls have to be in the bedrock of the code.
And the threat landscape is evolving so fast. I mean, quantum computing moves straight out of the theoretical physics labs and into executive conversations at GI Techs.
Because a quantum computer could potentially shatter standard encryption in hours?
Right, exactly. Which makes solutions like the Falcon Key Manager so relevant. People were talking about their launch because they're deploying scalable, quantum secure networks today.
Oh, wow. So it's not just a future threat thing.
No, it's happening now.
Yeah.
Quantum key distribution shifts security from just math to the actual laws of physics. If someone tries to intercept a key, the quantum state collapses, and you know instantly that the line is compromised.
That is wild. And we saw that paired with tools like Shadow Key, too, which was presented for private data protection. The focus is entirely on protecting the digital process end to end.
Yeah, and speaking of protecting assets, there was immense interest in Cosmical at the event.
Right, they showcased a remote shielded workspace and that solution called Endurance, right?
Yes, a remote shielded workspace is huge for a distributed European workforce dealing with sensitive defense or health data. It functionally separates the execution environment from the physical device.
So even if an employee's personal laptop gets malware, the enterprise data stays safe in this sovereign enclave.
Exactly. The malware just can't bridge the gap.
That's brilliant. We also saw platforms like Pass Machine drawing a lot of focus around secure process digitization because AI agents need verifiable, cryptographically secure inputs. An AI cannot process a wet ink signature on a scanned piece of paper.
Right. It needs that digital cryptographic guarantee. And that guarantee is what finally allows this intelligence to bleed out of the data centers and into the physical world.
Which brings us to the next massive frontier discussed on LinkedIn, physical AI.
Yes. Embedding intelligence directly into physical infrastructure, robotics, and IoT.
We saw so many concrete use cases for this, like RoboFinder, for example. They introduced a platform that intelligently matches specialist robots to specific healthcare use cases.
So instead of a hospital administrator manually hunting for an automated dispensing robot, this platform maps the hardware capabilities directly to the clinical workflow.
Exactly. It's an intelligent orchestration layer. And then there was ThinkCellAssist, which launched an AI solution for productivity, but with a really specific hook regarding user-owned output.
Oh, right. Addressing the intellectual property nightmare of Gen AI.
Yeah, making sure the user actually retains the IP rights to what the AI produces.
We also saw WatsingX Automation demonstrating advanced video analytics, and Blick showcasing actual driverless car capabilities already deployed in Estonia.
Estonia is such a fascinating sandbox for this stuff. Their regulatory environment for pilots makes them the perfect testing ground for edge case physical AI before rolling it out across the rest of Europe.
It really is. But, you know, bringing these massive physical ecosystems to life across Europe requires one fundamental thing: capital.
Oh, for sure. The founders on LinkedIn framed this with blunt clarity. Europe doesn't lack engineering talent or brilliant ideas. The friction point is commercialization.
Right. Founders need better access to capital and way less bureaucracy. But investors are getting picky. The winning founder profile isn't just someone with a clever AI wrapper around a generic language model anymore.
No, institutional investors are actively screening for extreme founder resilience and deep tech differentiation. They want teams solving those unglamorous, hard infrastructure problems, like the legacy ERP integration we talked about.
Which is why the physical ecosystem building at GITEX was viewed as so vital. You know, you might wonder why a physical pavilion matters so much for digital tech. But the national delegations basically turned the event into a massive engine for cross-border deal flow.
Yeah, we saw highly structured positioning from the Czech Republic, Bulgaria, Poland, Lower Saxony, NRW, and Dubai.
And the consensus was that these curated matchmaking side events provided infinitely more value than just casual networking. Like, the Czech Pavilion was actively connecting startups with integrators from Germany, Lithuania, and Poland.
It's all about securing practical market access. German companies were actively mapping out international expansion pathways in the UAE.
And this physical clustering is only accelerating. I mean, look at the announcement of GITEX Italy coming to Rome in 2027.
Right. It just proves that while we're obsessively building digital sovereign infrastructure, physically gathering these ecosystems together is still the ultimate driver of commercialization.
Absolutely.
When you pull all these insights together, it is just an incredibly complex, fast-moving landscape. We're building sovereign grids, deploying autonomous supply chain agents, and embedding intelligence into physical robotics.
It really brings us right back to that scenario of the supply chain AI autonomously signing a multi-million euro contract with a vendor's AI in Dubai. I mean, it leaves you with this provocative thought: when a machine autonomously negotiates and signs a binding corporate agreement with another machine, how are our current legal frameworks and sovereign borders going to handle a purely machine-to-machine corporate contract?
Wow. Yeah. The tech is moving so fast that our legal frameworks are going to have to sprint at top speed just to keep the machines in sight.
They really are.
If you enjoyed this episode, new episodes drop every 2 weeks. Also, check out our other editions on artificial intelligence, ICT and tech, digital products and services, cloud, sustainability and green ICT, defense tech, and health tech. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Keep exploring, stay curious, and don't forget to subscribe. Catch you next time.